And welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. It's a freestyle episode because next week is Christmas. So we're actually recording two episodes tonight, one freestyle one, and then end of year slash Christmas part one. And this is features editor John Gentilia, and I'm here with M. Moore. M. Moore, what's happening?
Hello, I have one brain cell left, and it's like, you know, the monkey with the symbols, and it just keeps going in a circle. That's the inside of my head right now.
Why do you have one brain cell left? What happened?
Oh, just getting ready for the holidays, so like wrapping up a bunch of stuff, like getting a lot of stuff done, and it's just like crunch time.
Do you
It's
mean
good though.
wrapping up? Do you mean wrapping up a bunch of stuff literally or metaphorically?
Oh, metaphorically.
Well, there you go. And we're also here with someone who I'm thrilled to have back on the podcast.
Woo!
Person who is back on the podcast. Let's see. We should have that person say something, but not say like say who their name is. Person who's back on the podcast. Would you like to meow or bark?
Meow.
Who could that be, Em? Who could that be meowing?
Meow.
Of course, and the audience can't guess because this is not a live show. That's Sam Barrett finally back on the show. Sam, welcome back.
I heard you guys miss me and all of my jadedness.
Yes.
So,
see, I don't think you're jaded at all. Why do you say you're jaded? I don't think you're jaded at all.
Oh, I could be so jaded, like Daria jaded, or maybe Jane Lane. I don't know. Maybe a mix of the two. Who knows? Yeah, I'm like literally throwing like as many like 90s references at you guys right now. But meow. Hi, meow.
Well, welcome back to the podcast, Sam.
Welcome back.
So we're actually not going to waste a whole lot of time because we will be wasting time in the next episode that we're going to record after this one. We're going to talk about the end of the year. But this one, we're just going to hit some quick news to keep you hungry for more of that glorious thing that you need, which is the Punk News Podcast. So the first thing we're going to talk about in the news today, Fat Mike is selling his stuff. He's got a thing called Fat Mike's Vault. It's on Instagram, where you can go and buy the rarest of all NoFX stuff, namely the 700-gram version of Single Album, which I think they only made like five or six of them. It's basically an inch-thick record because it's 700 gram. There is one at the Punk Rock Museum, which I saw. I don't know if he's selling that one or a different one. He's also selling a sign. And actually, let's see what it is on eBay right now while we're pulling up. He's also selling a copy of NoFX's singles. I'll tell you in a second here. So Single Album, actually, we're going to play a little bit of game here. Sam and M, guess what do you think the price of the 700 gram single album is up to right now? M, go first, closest without going over.
Okay, so this is on eBay?
On eBay right now, but it's not over yet. Still two more days. And as people know, on eBay, things can fly up to like the last minute. You know what I mean?
$350.
Sam, what's your bid?
I might be a little biased because I literally just had a conversation about this, so it's probably like $1,500.
Sam was this one, $1,600, 28 bids.
Oh, God.
Now, for the single, I Love You More Than You Hate Me, this is a 7-inch single signed by Fat Mike. Sam, you go first, closest without going over.
It's a 7-inch, like $400.
M, what's your bid?
I'm going to go, I was too low the last time, so I'm going to go 600.
Both over. Oh. Wipe the boards. Oh. Back to you, Sam. What's your bid?
Okay, so it has to be under 400. Oh, so, okay. Like, 350.
Sam, what's your bid?
I'm going to say 200.
Well, Em, you should always say a dollar. If you're the last person, you say a dollar. Anyway, though, Sam wins $375 right now.
Wait, hold on. Is this one U.S. dollar or one Canadian? Because there's a difference there.
Good question. How can no one ever settle price right, Bob? Is this in American money or Canadian? Fat Mike is kind of following in the footsteps of Lars Fredrickson of Rancid, who has it's called Lars's Laka, and he sells like his action figures. And it's somewhat similar to Tim Armstrong, who sells like art and sometimes his boots and stuff. And so here's the question, and I don't know whoever wants to take it first, is this really cool in that it's the fans getting really cool stuff that they couldn't get otherwise? So fans get, you know, really cool stuff, Or is it deification of humans, which is anti-punk? Or is it kind of price gouging the most desperate people willing to spend, or none of the above? So is it a positive or a negative? Sam, where do you stand?
Oh boy. Okay, so here's the thing. I'm not a fan of NoFX. However, I have seen NoFX a million times because my husband loves NoFX and a lot of my friends love NoFX. NoFX collectors, and I'm sure you guys already know I have a vast music record collection here in this house. So a lot of NoFX collectors, I have no idea how you guys have all of this money for stuff, because you guys spend stupid money on things. And my thing is, like, Fat Wreck and Fat Mike knows it, because they will repress things and they will always sell. Just look at the tour that they last did. They did like special variants of like the last tour. And all of those things are going for stupid money right now. My husband went and got some, because we need it for our collection apparently. But anyways, I think this is a way for collectors to get their hands on things that they probably would never get their hands on, especially if you're the type of person that loves signed things. This is coming directly from Fat. Not sure if it's Fat Wreck or Fat Mike or one of the Fats.
I believe it's Fat Mike, which is Fat. I mean, while Fat Mike is an owner of Fat Wreck, Fat Mike the person is a separate entity than Fat Wreck. This is coming from Fat Mike the person.
Yeah, so if this is coming directly from Fat Mike, then he should be getting all of the money. He knows the value of these things because Discogs tells us and all of the record collectors scream about this. So I don't think this is necessarily a bad thing, and I don't think this is necessarily a good thing. What I do think is this is more of a telling story of possibly that rumor or the selling or demise of Fat Wreck. I don't know what it is yet, but seems to be on par, so we'll see. Fat fans, don't come at me. Thanks.
I'll let M answer this for sure, but that does go to the next question. Is like it's interesting that with the rumors of Fat Wreck possibly selling, that all of a sudden Fat Mike is like, all right, I'm just going to, well, three things are coinciding: the end of NoFX, the possible sale or the rumored sale of Fat Wreck, and Fat Mike randomly selling his stuff. It is interesting that those three things are happening within a, you know, few month period, you know. So Em, how do you feel about that? And where do you stand on the very expensive records for sale via eBay to the hardest of hardcore fans?
Ooh, the records being sold on eBay feels like price gouging a bit. Because Sam, like you said, like they're not going to stop. Like they're just going to keep bidding and bidding and bidding because someone's going to want it more than someone else. And someone else is going to, you know, have so many more dollars. And it's going to be like this whole thing. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see where it ends up and how much it actually sells for. But I think no matter what he puts up there, it's going to go really, really high. With the baseless speculation, I think that might have a hand in this, because it has a feeling of collectible things that didn't sell. So it's kind of, what are we going to see next? What's coming out next? And also, like, what's the money going to be used for? So I think it's all connected somehow.
Wait, wouldn't this be great if, like, someone like Wil Wheaton, like, won this thing for a really stupid amount of money? Like, he's, like, a well-known person that's, like, into punk, you know?
It would be so cool. And I would just be like, hey, here it is, like, in my house or whatever.
Exactly. Like, and on the next episode of Cribs, Wil Wheaton. Oh, I just have this signed Fat No effects box. It's cool.
I
It'll be fun.
think it. I think Fat Mike, I mean, there's actually a really interesting interview with Fat Mike, I think in Spin about the end of NoFX. And
Ooh, okay.
I think Fat Mike is just done with NoFX, and not even necessarily in a bad way, like, I hate NoFX now. I think he's proud of NoFX, but I think he's moving on to a different period of his life and his artistic explorations. And so he's like, why do I need this stuff that I'm not even really enjoying? And so on one hand, it is kind of cool that he's giving his cool stuff to fans, but on the other hand, is really what he's selling. I mean, aside from the, I have no problem with the 700 gram record selling for a whole lot of money because it's a very limited item, and I don't necessarily think it's price gouging because it's price gouging is when you charge more for something than what it's worth, and here it's pe multiple people want to buy a one of a kind or almost one of a kind thing, so by definition, I don't think that's price gouging. It's what it is literally worth on the open market. The 7-inch, I'm a little bit more iffy on because he's not. I mean, the 7-inch is worth something because it's a colored variant, but people are really spending money on it because it's signed by Mike from Mike's collection, you know. And if someone wants that, fine. Well, actually, I don't have a problem with that, and here's why. If it, to me, autographs, I don't really care about them that much at all. And I mean, I do have a couple records that were like owned by certain, like I have Jello. Well, one of my favorite records is I have Jello, one of Jello Biafra's Hi-No records. And if the listeners probably know, Jello like loves Hi-No because he's so schmaltzy, I guess. And so, I mean, the record is worth nothing, but I think it's funny that I've got a Hi-No record that was owned by Jello. And so, I think it's kind of silly to buy something just because it has an autograph on it or something. But people like it, they like it. With the Fat Mike record, the 7-inch. I don't think it's quote worth whatever anyone's going to spend on it. But that being said, is I would say that's not price gouging because if you want the non-signed one, you can get it for like $40. So if it's worth $1,000 to you that you have a record that was owned by Fat Mike, I disagree with that perspective. I mean, Fat Mike is not a deity, no one is, especially not in punk rock. So if someone wants to treat Fat Mike as a deity, that's kind of on them and not on Fat Mike. I think there's a big difference here between Fat Mike selling his stuff and Tim Armstrong like selling NFTs, which I thought was totally lame,
Oh,
or when
yeah.
Tim Armstrong like sells signed prints for like $500. It's like I think he, I don't know if he knows, but he's definitely gouging vulnerable fans that are kind of too dumb to realize they're throwing their money in the toilet. But then on the other hand, if they're that dumb, maybe it's on them. Maybe it's not on Tim Armstrong. I don't know. Oh, the NFT thing was kind of sketchy because they was like, NFTs are going to be worth money, guys. So buy Tim Armstrong's winking skull for $2,000 and now it's worth like nothing. You know what I mean? But it was kind of sold as something that has inherent value. Whereas perhaps a signed print, it always is what it's going to be. It's a piece of paper that's signed, so you know what you're buying, as opposed to the NFT thing, which I thought was kind of, sketchy. So, like I said, I think people spending that money, I think that's probably a poor perspective. But I don't think you can fault Fat Mike, especially with the one of a kind or almost one of a kind record. The signed sandwich, I'm a little bit more iffy on. But if someone wants to buy it, then let them buy it, I guess. Like, if someone is happy spending 2,000, like, who's the loser in the situation? There is no loser. If someone wants to spend $2,000 on a signed 7-inch that you can get for $40 unsigned, and Fat Mike wants to sell it, and the person is happy they spent two, I mean, they willingly spent $2,000 on it. So who's the loser? There is no loser, right? Everyone got what they thought they would get, right? As opposed to the NFT, if you will.
Yeah, well, I think the question here is, what is all of this stuff really worth? You know,
Yeah.
this so the 7-inch, right? Like, yes, it's signed by Fat Mike, but it's worth something to someone else. And you know, the other thing is, whoever buys this is going to have something to reference. Look, I bought this thing that was on an Instagram account that Fat Mike, like, there is actually, like, possibly a direct what is it called, Provence?
Lineage.
Yeah, exactly, a lineage directly back to him right
Oh,
now.
you said provenance. Is that the, that's the word. That is the word. You're right. You're definitely right. Provenance.
That's the art history of me, the stuffiness. But yeah, no, like, there is a definite, thing. And if someone wants to pay for that story, like, oh my God, like, look, I won this, and it's directly from him. Look, there's a picture on his, Fat Mike Vault Instagram account. God knows if, like, in 20 years Instagram's still a thing, but like MySpace. But like, there was some kind of like record keeping of this thing, because the internet never dies. But yeah,
Sam,
no.
would you pay for a signature?
I have not paid for a signature yet. I do have a couple things that are signed, but I have acquired them through, like, let's say, like, I have a Minus the Bear Boys record that is signed by the band. And I only that was only signed because I was like one of the first like 50 people or something that pre-ordered the album, and like they signed, like they did that, oh, actually, Chris did get a signed Bad Religion box set, and that was randomly the box sets, the signed ones, were randomly put in to orders, so you had to be like lucky to get one, like things like that. I have not actively seeked anyone to sign things. I've actually seen people go to shows with records to get bands to sign it, and they're like in the front, and
Oh,
the
no.
Record's getting crushed, and I'm like standing there, like going, "Oh no, the record!" Because I'm like weird like that, instead of like trying to be like cool and being like, "Okay, I'm gonna try to see them after the show or something," yeah, no, it's too much work. I'm too old for this.
And I'm gonna ask end that question, but I'm gonna tell my quick. I mean, I don't really get records signed. I usually don't get records signed because I feel like at my position, not that I'm famous or anything, but as a journalist, if you like ask someone for their signature, in most but not all situations, it puts you below them, and if you want to have a good interview or something like that, then you need to be at that person's level, not just a fan. Now, sometimes being just a fan can work, but for me, I usually don't do that. Although one time, an artist that I know did a live show, and I had his book, and I think he was hurt that I didn't ask for an autograph, and I regret not asking for an autograph. You know what I mean? Like, I think he would have liked to get, But here's my other funny autograph story: is I know a guy that's an insane record collector, and he loves to get stuff signed. It's not Ricky; it's somebody else. And
The first person that came to my mind was Ricky.
I actually think it's cool that Ricky gets stuff signed, and I'm sure Ricky's collection looks really cool with all the signatures. But so this guy, he loves getting records signed. Yeah, it's cool and it's a nice guy. And I went to see Flock of Seagulls in Reading, Pennsylvania, which is the middle of nowhere, really. And he happened to be there, and I didn't know that he liked Flock of Seagulls. And he's like, he says to me, he's like, "I found the hotel Flock of Seagulls is going to be at after the show. Do you want to go to there and get signatures?" And
Oh my God.
I was like, I'm like, no. I mean, I was like, trying to be polite. I'm like, man, I don't be hanging out like Flock of Seagulls hotel at like 2 a.m. It might get real weird. Might get like real weird. You know what I mean? So I'm like, I got it. Thanks, man. But I got to get going. It's a weeknight, so I got to get back to work. So
I
that,
hope
no.
this person isn't the same person that I know that would like sneak into like band buses just to hang out and get things signed.
No.
Yeah, weird. People are weird.
M,
Yes.
would you pay for a signature on a record?
I would not pay for a signature on a record. If it was something like I bought it, or I pre-ordered it and they like gave it, was part of that whole thing, like that would be really cool and fun. But again, you're not paying for the signature at that point. I don't have any like media signed. I have a ticket. I have a couple tickets that are signed, that are were kind of surprises, so that was pretty exciting. I saw Gerard Way on his solo tour in, oh my gosh, like 2015, I think. Or whenever that was. And like, we go to the show and it's a lot of fun and whatever. And then everyone's like starts filing out, and it's like, wait, no, he's out there. He's gonna sign everyone's ticket who was like on the floor. And it was like, what? So that was pretty cool. That was a lot of fun and unexpected and really, really, really rad. So that's my only kind of autograph thing.
Let me tell my other, not to be a topper, let me tell my other signature story, and then we'll move on. So when I was first getting into punk, I saw the new Misfits, which was Jerry Only, Dez Kadena, and it was Marky Ramone at the time. Marky and Robo would swap in and out, and I saw them at the Crowbar in Penn State, which I think is no longer there. And at the time, I didn't even understand the difference between new Misfits and old Misfits, and I didn't even I was actually already a Danzig fan, but I didn't know that Danzig was the Misfits. I didn't know that, and so. After the show, Jerry Only comes out. Actually, he doesn't come out. He stays on stage, kind of like a WWF kind of guy. And he, poses and, holds his arms up, like, I'm Jerry Only. Look at me and my muscles. I'm Jerry Only. Come get signatures. And then, he's doing all these signatures. And he's, squeezing on all the girls there. And at the time, I'm like, wow, man. Jerry Only's so cool, man. All these girls are throwing themselves at him. And now it's like, he was, I don't know, 55 then. And the girls are, 18. And I'm like, that's mask. That's not cool. And so, anyways, so I'm trying not to be a dick, and so I'm literally the last in line, and I'm the last in line, and then so Jerry signs the guy in front of me, and then it's me, and I'm like, hi, Jerry, and he looks down at me, and then he just turns around and starts walking away, and the roadie or maybe it was the engineer or the sound guy or whatever sees what's going on. He's like, Jerry, that guy wants an autograph, and Jerry just walked away, and the guy looks at me like I'm sorry, man. So he gave me Jerry Only's used bass strings,
Oh
and I still have them. And I'm like, and I, at the time I'm like, well, I guess I can sell these, but who wants to buy Jerry Only's used bass strings? I have no provenance, you know what I mean? So that was my Jerry Only interaction. It was weird, man. I don't know why he hated me just by the look of me. I don't know. I don't know. He hated me, Sam. He hated me.
he doesn't like your aura.
He
It's
didn't.
your
He didn't.
aura.
Well, let's see. Let's talk about some. We'll talk about a couple of stories briefly. Here's a band with a really cool aura. The Melvins are going back on tour this spring and summer. And the reason it's a big deal is because the Melvins are back to a four piece. It's going to be Buzz. It's going to be Dale on drums. It's going to be Steve on bass. And it's going to be Cody Willis, who was in the Melvins for about maybe almost 10 years with Big Business on drums as well. So it's Melvins with two drummers, one bass, one guitar. And it's going to be awesome. I love Melvins as a four piece. I'm super excited. I love how the Melvins are constantly changing their lineup. They're constantly changing their format. And that's why they've remained relevant and interesting and cool and fun for 40 years now. So it's going to be cool. Sam and Em, I don't know if you have any comments on that or not. Do you enjoy, Sam and Em, do you enjoy when your favorite bands change their lineup, or are you annoyed? Because Melvins change their lineup all the time. However, in Melvins' defense, though, it's always Buzz and Dale. Or the original, well, Dale isn't technically original, but basically the original guys. So it's always the original guys plus, it's not like the Damned without Captain Sensible or something. You know what I mean?
I don't think I have too many bands that have a revolving cast of humans that shows up. However, I do think that such iterations of things like this can be fun because you might have like a favorite lineup, and if they tell you ahead of time, like, this is going to be the four piece, then you might want to actually go or not. Or if you only love the three piece of them, then do that. I don't know, like, if there is like something special or like the way that they sound that is like different live, or even like stage banter live is better as a four piece. I would like totally be like all up in that.
With the like rotating lineups and stuff, I think it's fun. Single mothers do that all the time. You don't really know what the lineup of the tour is going to be until they announce it, and they have different people playing on different releases and different recordings and different albums. So seeing them's always fun because you don't know what the lineup's gonna, Drew Thompson's gonna be there, like, obviously, but other than that, you're like, who's it gonna be? And it's always cool. People go, they come back. Like Ross was in the band and then he left to like do Dirty Nil stuff and whatever, and then he came back and he toured with them for a little bit, and I don't think he's touring with them at now, but he was. So I don't know, it's cool, it's fun. Two drummers is always an interesting kind of dynamic, so
Well, speaking
exciting.
of an interesting dynamic, the Coathangers released a remix of Perfume, which was originally on their Fantastic and Best album, Nosebleed Weekend, which is insanely almost 10 years old now. Oh my God. Coathangers really had, they actually pumped their last album, The Devil You Know, pretty hard. They went on a tour, it was cool. And then they kind of didn't do anything after that. And so, just a brief question is do you guys think the Coathanger, I love the Coathangers, one of my all-time favorite bands. Do you think they're over? I'll kick it off. I do think the Coathangers are over because they all live in different states. One lives in California, one lives in like Boston or something, and one lives in Georgia, Atlanta, Georgia. And so they're literally about as far apart from each other as a band could be while all being in the contiguous 48 states. And so I think sadly it's the end. I wonder what the dynamic is between you three. But it's sad because they're all like always posting like pictures of the coat hangers on their individual Instagrams. So you think they don't, you would think they maybe still do get along. But if they get along, how come it's been like 5 years since the last actual thing released? So I don't know. I'm sad. I love the coat hangers. M, is it the end of the coat hangers?
I don't think it's the end of the coat hangers. I think they're
Why?
gonna come back.
Why?
Well, because a lot's happened in the 4 or 5 years. They haven't released anything. You know, like they're busy, they're working, they're probably work, or they could be, baseless speculation. They could be working on stuff, they could be like working on stuff remotely, they could be setting up times to like go meet or whatever. I think they still get along. I think there's still the drive there. I don't think the coat hangers are just kind of like a memory to them. I think they want it to be active again. So I think we're going to see more from them at some point, hopefully soon. Fingers crossed. Sam, what do you think? Are the coat hangers coming back?
Well, anything could happen. If they haven't announced we're done, I hate each other. Like it could be anything. Like it could be that life has taken over. It could be that, you know, someone wants to start a family or got married or whatever, you know. You know, my husband's in a band and in two bands, and you know, the one out of state band, like we're getting it done, like, you know. Consistently like seeing each other or like, you know, doing a lot of like talking or digital things. I was like, I think the pandemic has shown us that bands got really savvy with not being together, but actively working on things. You know, there's like right after the pandemic, there was tons of records that came out. That like, you know, I would talk to people and they're like, oh yeah, we would just like send files back and forth. Even now, like there's bands that you know, they don't live near each other and they're just sending things back and forth and getting it done, you know. So yeah, I don't think that they're done. Maybe they're on a break or a hiatus because, you know, everyone's entitled to that. Maybe they're strategically planning a long pause to make everyone crave them again. Like, you know,
Ooh,
yeah, which is, you
yeah.
know, a media tactic, I guess. So, you know, anything is possible right now. If no one hates each other, anything is possible.
Well,
Words to live by.
good quote there. So let's wrap this up with some more basic speculation, and then we'll shut this episode down, and then we will begin end of year part one. So on February 15 at Gramps in Miami, Florida, it's Flat Spot World Miami, headlined by Scow, also playing Zulu, Day by Day, Jive Bomb, and some other
Oh,
band,
that's
Obscure.
obscured.
Oh, and the name of and their logo is Obscure. I couldn't read it. I wonder if that's on purpose or not.
Hope so.
This is particularly interesting because Scout somewhat recently announced that they were signing to a different label, which actually I actually had never heard of, but actually is a very significant label. So that's really more me than them. Let's see here. Dead Oceans. And so it
Wait,
appears
they're
that
on Dead Oceans?
they are on Dead Oceans,
Damn.
Sam. And of course they released that new metal tinged video, which caught me off guard, I'll say. And so is this just them kind of like saying, hey, thanks, old label, you guys are real cool and we're gonna hang around still? Or is there more to it, Sam?
I think there's more to it. I don't think once you sign to another label, you're ever officially gone for the label. Like if you peruse through label websites, there's always like, a section of alumni, and it's very plausible that they left for a bigger D Dead Oceans is a bigger label. I'm pretty sure Japanese Breakfast is on Dead Oceans or
Yeah, you know, Dead Ocean has some really big bands on it.
Yeah, and maybe Slow Dive. But like, so like essentially it is a step up for them. And I think every label wants their bands to move on up. Like they don't want them staying with them forever, because if there's a different opportunity for them, then at least if I ran a label and I had bands on it, I would want them all to like move to wherever they need to go. No hard feelings, unless there was bad blood, right?
Sam, I'm going to end this
Yeah, for sure.
podcast right now and take you to part of my day job and have you explain to some things to some people that really need to hear you say that.
They people actually need me to say this, really?
Yes, they do. They do.
Well,
Yet again, Sammy B speaking the truth.
I'm just saying it because honestly, I was like, in order for bands to grow, they need to get to places and they need to grow. Like, don't stifle a band because you want them on your label forever. Like, it's very plausible that they might come back to you an another time. Like, it happens all the time.
Preach, preach,
Yeah.
sister, preach.
So, with Flat Spot World, one, don't know why it's Miami, but okay, fine, sun, because it's in February. But hey, like if they are coming down for that, then go right ahead. It's also plausible that they and confirmed Scowl confirmed that they'll do Flat Spot World before
True.
they got
Oh
signed.
yeah.
So
True,
like,
true.
why mess that, I guess, contract up or whatever. I don't know. But this seems fun. This for me, living in New York and John living in Philly, leaving to go to somewhere sunny in February is probably ideal idea for us. So fun for me. Florida, eh.
Take the sun, leave the state.
And more
Yeah.
closing word on the scowl, totally based in speculation. What this
Totally
really is
baseless
fun.
speculation.
It's a bit of slow news week, and we're trying to drum up stuff to talk about, you know.
We are masters of baseless speculation. yeah, I think, well, like a lot of hardcore labels like Flat Spot and Convaults and stuff, like they have such a community kind of built around them, and they really seem to care about their bands. And obviously, like I'm not on any of the labels, so I don't know like the inner workings. But just from like an outsider's perspective and talking to people who are on the labels, they do seem very like exactly Sam, like what you said, they want their bands to succeed. And if that means they need to take a leap of faith and go somewhere else, they need to take a leap of faith and go somewhere else. But they're still within the circle. They're still within that like we got you. We want to help you out any way we can, kind of thing. So I think that's what this is. But yeah, I think Sam put it very, very well.
Well, I'll just close out the discussion by
Yes.
saying Scout rules, man. I mean, like that the album is awesome. The Psychic Dance
Yes.
Routine record is cool. The remix is amazing of Psychic Dance Routine. And so I'm holding out hope. You know, I think Ska's a real cool band. They're great live. And, you know, a lot of times when a band gets bigger, people are like, ugh, they change or whatever. And I get that. And, you know, I didn't love the newest single. But like I said, maybe I'm not hearing it. I'm not hearing it in the right frame of mind. But, you know, if a band is going to get big from the hardcore world, I'm glad that it's Ska because they're a unique bit. There's so many. I mean, I don't need to name names, but there's so many bands in the hardcore world. Well, actually, I'm going to split this in two ways. There's so many bands in the hardcore world that are just so cliche and generic. It's like, I heard that band in 1988. You know what I mean? Like, why is everyone freaking out about this band? That this band has been done 500 times before. Ska is cool in that they are different. But on the other hand, there are bands like Sam, who's that really huge hardcore band, but they're actually not hardcore at all, and they sing and they sound like U2.
Military Gun.
Well, them too.
Turnstile?
Turnstile. Military Gun is Turnstile's younger brothers. Like it was like, oh man, like this is the future of hardcore. And I'm like, this is hard. It sounds like you too. How is this hardcore? You know? And then, you know, I know everyone loves Knocked Loose right now, and Knocked Loose is bizarrely huge. And I'm gonna sound like a hater, but it just sounds, well, I don't know. Why am I talking smack on Knocked Loose? Scowl's cool. We'll see you next week. This has been the Punk News Podcast. Stay tuned next week for the end of year part one. See you later before I dig myself deeper in a hole. Podcast at punknews.org. I'm going to hit stop recording in 5, 4, 3, 2.